Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about cannabis and hemp banking, as well as the impact of coronavirus on the East Coast. And we are joined by Hoban Law Group senior attorney, Steve Shane. Steve, thank you for taking some time to be with us here this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, Steve, tell us a little bit about how your day-to-day has been affected, what you're seeing on the East Coast, and in particular New Jersey, as it relates to the outbreak of this pandemic.
Well, day-to-day, we are in stay-in-place here in the East Coast. About 10 days ago, it came, at least in Pennsylvania, where I make my home. They basically shut down all commercial establishments other than those that are absolutely necessary, gas stations, hospitals, and supermarkets. Not everybody abided by that, and then they became more restrictive and more specific in the enforcement. So everything is shut down. Even now, you can't go to a gym or anything like that. So everybody is at home unless you're deemed an essential work. Same thing in New Jersey, too. Interestingly, that's been a very interesting development, though, for legalized marijuana. Some good, some not so good. There's an old saying that necessity is the mother of invention. And we've seen great strides and huge credibility in medical marijuana in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. The governor deemed us, of both states, the governors deemed our industry as being essential. So all dispensaries are open. And neither Jersey nor Pennsylvania do we have adult use marijuana. It's strictly medical. So among the few things that are out there. So inadvertently, we were bestowed with enormous credibility. In some small circles, they still view us with a degree of skepticism. They don't necessarily realize how wonderful our industry is and how it helps sick Americans. But those days are even less now because one of the few essential services open. Second, neither Jersey nor Pennsylvania allows for either home delivery or curbside service. That changes. The dispensaries have stepped forward and are coming out to cars and actually bringing medicine to the registered patients in both states, and that's very wonderful too. I haven't had a chance to check in with the dispensaries to see how their numbers are doing. I'm not trying to add to their burdens, but the coverage has been extraordinary. We've seen wonderful things, primarily on social media, but also on other forms of electronic media, showing, frankly, the heroic duties these bud tenders are doing, going in, really battling great danger to help provide medication to sick Pennsylvanians and Jerseyans. So that's all very wonderful. In terms of the other stuff of day to day, I, in a more cynical point of view, considering that 68% of medical marijuana in this region is used to treat anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic pain, and sleep issues, I suspect usage is very high. I imagine the great anxiety, I guess in a nice way, is receiving a salubrious benefit from our industry. But I'm really sad that's the way it had to happen.
In Denver, just yesterday, they issued an order that effectively required folks to work from home and stay from home. And that was a long time coming. And part of that order from the mayor of Denver, Mayor Hancock, made a distinction initially between adult use or recreational dispensaries and medical marijuana dispensaries. Of course, we've got that dual system here in Colorado. So as you could imagine, around 2 p.m. when the mayor announced this, there was an uproar, and consumer behavior, of course, led to lines and a little bit of a public outcry on social media and the like. And the mayor very quickly changed his course from allowing just medical dispensaries to allowing recreational or adult use stores to be open as well. So it is a sign of the times that these are, in fact, essential businesses. And it's amazing how quick we're talking about marijuana businesses in that vein as essential versus being something that would otherwise be relegated to the black or illicit market. But as we look at how this pandemic will affect the cannabis industry overall, let's change our focus a little bit to the fabulous moolah, to banking in and of itself.
Ha 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 ha
as it relates to cannabis in light of the coronavirus, if there's a specific impact there.
Your point is well taken. So banking is the core of everything, all industry, and most so legalized marijuana. But let's separate our terms here for a second. Let's, as you would, I guess, maybe, I don't know, the Intercontinental Belt from the actual World Championship Belt. What I would say here is that in terms of the services provided by institutions, albeit banks or credit unions, they can be depository institutions in which they provide banking services like depository accounts, check writing services, wire transfers, and ACH, which is a prime thing that every business must have. And additionally, another thing that banks do is lend. So sometimes in the financial services definition, if you get consolidated, but they're very different. Two of the great obstacles legalized marijuana and industrial hemp industry has had is getting any form of financial services, meaning these depository accounts. That's been a problem in the road, causing all kinds of issues. And the next problem, which is probably even a greater problem, is getting any form of financing. Now, if you've been in the industry for more than 12 seconds, you probably have learned that a lot of marijuana-related businesses, growers, processors, transporters, sellers, really have no assets. They're startup new companies. And to get a loan, you really need assets to secure the loan. So in terms of getting loans, marijuana-related businesses face the general obstacle against the industry, and number two, they don't satisfy the underwriting criteria. For the actual banking itself, that has been, however, an earlier and bigger problem. Interestingly, that leads to stems from a historic problem, and it may be solved by a current problem. The historic problem. If the Hoban Minute podcast had taken place in 2017 instead of 2020, we'd be talking about two different forms of cash. Today, we're just talking about what's called operational cash. That's all the stuff that's going across the transom at dispensaries across America at this moment. In prior years, though, there was something called legacy cash. And that had money that was mostly in areas that had black or gray markets, not white markets like we have now, where people received cash for marijuana sales who may or may not have had licenses. And if they did have licenses, they may or may not have declared that money and had to suffer the onerous tax of 280E, which I'm sure an upcoming Minute will attack. But that money was just sitting around undeclared. And the real concern was what's happening with that cash. So the bulk of the enforcement of the existing laws regarded legacy cash, not operational cash, because of proliferation of legalized marijuana, because 34 states, the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Mariana Islands have some form of legalized marijuana, it really has eviscerated a lot, not all of it, but a lot of the black market, certainly on the East Coast. So the great concern faced by the Treasury Department about all this illegal money and perhaps our IRS of people not paying tax on their money is really diminished. So now the real issue is just how do we do this? There's still a great deal of confusion, ignorance about how marijuana works, but a lot of legislation has been out there, including the States Act and more recently the Safe Banking Act. Now, one of the great charms of legalized marijuana is also one of our great weaknesses. It's feast or famine. Either somebody is an absolute goat or he is salvation. No matter what's happening here, either something's killing us or going to save us. And that's certainly true of the Safe Banking Act, a solid piece of legislation that has met with some degree of acceptance in many major circles, but it was not going to pass in 2019, in 2020, even if this virus hadn't happened. Why? Well, among our many, many, many wonderful trade organizations, the NCIA has something called lobby days, where people who want to effectuate change and legalize marijuana meet with legislators and the staff. And we met with Chuck Schumer's staff, who said flat out, we couldn't support this more, and it doesn't have any chance of being passed, because it's now fallen into sort of a morass of trying to accomplish very wonderful social equity goals that are being tagged to this that guarantee this thing is going to die a lonely death. So all kinds of pork was attached to it, very delicious pork, but pork nonetheless, that doomed the Safe Banking Act. Now, the Safe Banking Act itself has received support originally by the American Bankers Association, and more recently by 49 state banking associations, all except Kentucky, because of our dear friend Mitch McConnell down there doesn't want to help us out. Okay. But that doesn't really mean anything. The senators have to want to pass it. And even if they did pass it, it's really not quite the game changer everybody would have you believe. What's happened in banking, we call it the waterfall at the Hoban Law Group. And here's how the waterfall takes place. At the very top, what controls so much of our lives and legalized marijuana is the Controlled Substance Act, which says it's 100% against federal law to grow, process, sell, transport, or possess marijuana. As a result of that, despite legality in 34 states and a number of American commonwealths, every deposit or withdrawal of any money regarding growing, processing, selling, transporting marijuana is a violation of the Bank Secrecy Act. It is money laundering. Now, a Band-Aid was offered in 2014 by the Treasury Department called the FinCEN Guidance. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network said, we're not saying it's legal, but our real concern is legacy cash. As his legacy cash really is primarily an issue in two states, California, where it's still an issue, and Michigan, where it's really not an issue that much anymore. Here's how you can do this properly. The FinCEN guidance imposed onerous requirements to onboard marijuana-related businesses and even more onerous requirements to bank marijuana. Most banks have to charge ridiculous amounts of money. I've seen as little as $2,500 per month per account. I've seen as high as $10,000 per month per account for the mere privilege of having a depository account. They have to do a number of things, banks, including file what are called suspicious activity reports with every deposit or withdrawal. And that brings us to the crux. The crux isn't business to business. The crux is business to consumer. If you go to the end of the supply chain, when someone for medical or adult use purposes goes to a dispensary, they'd like to use their credit card. They can't. Credit card companies do not allow credit cards to be used to purchase marijuana. To do that, you'd have what's called a merchant's code, and they're forbidding it. Why? Credit card companies make 2% of every sale. The average marijuana sale, at least in the East Coast, is $147.50. A credit card company would make $3 on that sale, ideally. But for every sale, they'd have to file a suspicious activity report with Financial Crimes Enforcement Network and also comply with the requirements. It just isn't worth it for them. If the ultimate consumer can't use a credit card, they have to use cash. That means cash flows up and down the entire supply chain. The Safe Banking Act, all it would really do is bring in the FinCEN guidance, which is just a memorandum issued by the Treasury Department, and make that official law. Okay, that's better, but it hasn't really changed the game totally. It adds legitimacy. It's not perfect, but it's good. It has other benefits too, which is the real issue from an operational point of view that a bank faces internally is insurance. A bank's deposits, if they're a traditional bank, is guaranteed or insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, for whom I served as outside counsel a number of times. And if you're a credit union, it's CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. And the FDIC really doesn't want to insure marijuana deposits. And interestingly, CUNA does. CUNA's okay with it. This would alleviate those insurance woes. This would prevent a bank from kicking you out for banking marijuana, which happens. A body of law which has 17,000 pages of regulations called the Dodd-Frank Act was issued, which makes it really impossible for a bank to make money banking unless you're north of $1 billion in assets. So many banks kick out marijuana companies. Now, with all that, which is really quite a lot, an interesting development has happened today. Mr. Hoban, in addition to being knowledgeable of all things legal, sports, and entertainment, is a great man of letters. So Bob Hoban could tell you one of his favorite phrases is called filthy lucre. It's an old English phrase that described money, lucre, as being unclean. And actually it is. Money is a really disgusting thing that absorbs and absorbs all kinds of germs and stuff like that. And I think what we're going to see is in a post-viral environment, we're going to get away from actual what's called fiat currency, the stuff in your wallet, and heads more towards virtual currency. that in itself is going to be helpful to the banking aspect of legalized marijuana.
That's prominently featured, as I understand it, in at least the discussions in Congress right now about this this aid bill that would attach to itself to coronavirus recovery, the creation of basically digital dollars, digital cash, which has been maligned to date by the U.S. government. And all of a sudden, it seems to be getting in there to the point where digital currency in some form, in a naturally U.S. focused form, is coming around. But we don't have a lot of time, and a lot of that stuff is really, really helpful and fascinating, sort of looking at how we get away from cash or fiat currency, to your point. But let's just talk for a moment and drive this to the home finish here, and that is, there's been so much progress on the East Coast, and the East Coast has taken a different tact in terms of legalizing cannabis than we've seen in many other places. It's come from different sources. It's come in more scientifically or medically based forms than it has in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. How's the coronavirus going to impact all of that progress? Does it simply put the issue on the side? Or do we see some hope for additional states and or reform in the states of Pennsylvania and New Jersey towards a more adult use or open market over-the-counter cannabis policy?
Well, two things. It's contextual, Bob. And what's happening here in 2020 and late 2019 has been kind of a reversal of the progress we've seen. If this podcast were being recorded 9 months to a year ago, I'd say, well, the standalones are kind of running out of time. The marijuana business has gone so fast that multi-state operators now dominate the playing field, and your days are pretty much numbered if you're a standalone. I don't believe that anymore. I think because multi-state operators increase so much and so fast and have such cash problems, I believe the standalones, especially the vertically integrated ones, are in a lot stronger position. I think to the extent of this environment, I think what we're going to see a lot more is client loyalty. I think we're going to see a lot more client servicing. I'm unclear exactly what this virus involves and what kind of healthful benefits marijuana and oil-based hemp-derived products may or may not have. That can be pretty interesting, too. In East Coast, they took a very different point of view than the other side of the Mississippi River, and they really focused on big marijuana, which at this point is having a lot of problems that smaller marijuana isn't. A huge issue now is going to be who is the financing to survive. Again, 9 months ago, when I saw everything resulting and into the ensuing year, back to 2 years ago to 2018, we saw a lot of money coming in from SPACs and stuff, which I just don't see anymore. And I think those people have created huge operations they can't fund. And I think they have huge expectations from their shareholders. So I think you're going to see the rise of the smaller operators going to be in a stronger position.
Well, and we've heard the phrase a couple of times that cash is king in the post-virus economy. Thoughts on that, Steve?
It is. What you're going to see, it really depends on how you're defining cash, but money is king. So again, this is going to sound sort of cynical and to set the bar low for cynicism. Quite honestly, every time a clock ticks, that second hand moves, it's good for marijuana, because every time somebody is born into a white or gray market, the people who passionately oppose our industry die. And at the risk of being a little heartless, this epidemic is going to accelerate that quite a bit. I think a lot of people are going to be born, but I think a generation of people are going to have bigger fish to fry. So that is going to be sort of an impact on the outcome here. Secondly, no one's going to have any money. Most Americans have no money. They live paycheck to paycheck. They still have 6 months' salary saved up, and people are sitting on hoards of cash right now. So there's an old cynical saying, when there's blood on the streets, buy real estate. When this thing crests, you're going to see huge acquisitions going on, and that's going to run everything. There are investors right now in legalized marijuana looking at distressed assets. A lot of people who started marijuana business did so with a huge learning curve. A lot of multi-state operators can't get out of this fast enough. People sitting on those mountains of cash that are there are going to be in an incredibly strong position. How that impacts, I don't know. We were seeing enormous consolidation. I think it's going to slow it down. I think it's going to move marijuana back to where it was about 2.5 years ago. But that'll be interesting. Another great interesting too is how are these people going to be paid? You know, these huge operations that employ 80, 90, 100 people, how are they going to be paid? What are they going to use? What are the banks going to do? I represent a number of banks, as our firm does, outside of our cannabis and hemp practice. And, you know, there is a flow of cash into the bank. If people are not employed and not making deposits, if people are seizing up their deposits, if certain loans aren't being issued and people are paying those loans, the banks are going to have less cash. So the real issue is how quickly can the economy get back on its feet, get people functioning, get the foundation enterprises like banks, other financiers in a positive position so the cash flow can keep everything going. Yeah. But in the short run, whoever's hoarding the cash is going to win this round.
That is truly where things are at right now. Steve, you are a wealth of knowledge. We cannot wait to have you as a frequent guest on the Hoban Minute and dig into all of these topics more. We really appreciate you stopping by today, though, and sharing all of this with us.
Thanks again, Steve. Appreciate it. Where there is chaos, there is opportunity. We just have to find it. And for the foreseeable future, cash is king. Thanks again.
Great job, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.